Welcome to Conscious Voices, a weekly program dedicated to bringing you alternative points of view and challenging popular assumptions in order to help you be better informed and civically engaged. I'm Evan Davis, your host for this edition. We've all heard the news about the latest developments in Palestine, but depending on where you get your news, you may not have been given the full context. American media outlets, in an effort to create the appearance of fairness and balance, present what they will tell you are both sides. And actually, media coverage has been getting a little better, offering Palestinian points of view and observations that were until now given short shrift or omitted. The State Department is falling further behind public perceptions, as every comment from Biden on down is prefaced with assurances about the immutability of American support for Israel and Israel's right to self-defense. Then a nod to Palestinians, who they will say have the right to live in peace. But the disproportionality of the Israeli aggression toward Palestinians in Gaza has gained the public's attention, and people are beginning to question Israel's morality and the massive subsidies that the U.S. gives to them each year with no apparent strings attached. The death toll alone in this latest flare-up, over 200 Palestinians killed, nearly a third of them children, and fewer than 30 Israelis killed with thousands of injuries and hundreds of homes destroyed in Gaza, that certainly tells the story. But we risk overlooking or even forgetting that Israel was the aggressor and the initiator in this latest escalation. That makes Hamas's ineffectual small rockets a response to an attack, not a unilateral attack to be responded to. Israel is attempting to evict Palestinians from East Jerusalem. That's how this started. In the last Palestinian neighborhood, then that historic city, Israel had served notice and was beginning to push out Palestinian families that had lived there for many generations. They also blocked access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the final days of Ramadan. This naturally gave rise to protests by Palestinians, and those were met with tear gas, rubber bullets, and clubs, much like we've seen in our urban protests over police brutality here in the United States. Reportedly, three Palestinian protesters lost an eye each, and one man in his 30s was killed. That's how it all began this time. And this took place against a backdrop of escalated aggression by Israel toward Palestine in other ways, namely the construction of new settlements, encroaching even further into Palestine's remaining fragments. Very often there are smaller acts of violence that are not officially sanctioned by the state, such as settlers vandalizing olive orchards or harassing Palestinian children on their way to school. The sum of Israeli policies toward Palestine, including checkpoints and fortified highways between the illegal settlements, and further fragmentation of Palestine, often separating farmers from their land, has made life in Gaza and the West Bank unbearable. Water is unfit for consumption, electricity is very limited, sometimes there are curfews imposed, and always the threat of incursions either by air with bombs or on the ground with troops. You can't build a building in Gaza without a permit issued by Israel. And when people say that Gaza is under occupation, this is what they mean. And though an immediate ceasefire is the most urgent goal for the moment, great harm and damage has already been done. Palestinian-American professor Noura Erekat, who I've featured on this program in the past, said on Democracy Now! Today that while the ceasefire may save people in the flesh, life, meaning the fullness of it, has already been taken. But as these conflicts flare up every few years, this one seems to have hit a turning point in the struggle, as Palestinians are united as never before, both in Palestine and throughout the diaspora communities. So say the folks who protested here in Columbus last Saturday at a rally at the State House that drew over 500 people. I was there and recorded this audio.
Thirsty, you guys are gonna be doing a lot of yelling. So, if you get thirsty, we do have some water. It's back here.
We ordered a beer. We want no water. We're trying to get this done.
And I just want to say you guys are all beautiful. I love having all of you out here. And now we're going to go ahead with our next speaker.
Hey, how's it going, guys? How many more lives have to go before change happens? How many more lives of these Palestinian kids have to go before change happens? Too many lives have been taken. And this change must stop. And change must happen. I'm sorry. Guys, the funding to Israel must stop now. Change must happen now. Guys, I am so tired. I am so tired of scrolling through social media and seeing innocent lives being taken by this Israeli military. Guys, I've witnessed it firsthand. When I traveled to Palestine, my mom got hate for her going over there to Palestine, guys. Change must come. And we must not see more killings before change happens. Change must happen now.
That's right. Change must happen now. Change is going to come first and foremost from the Palestinian people who are resisting. But we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. We must support the Palestinian people. We must remove the obstacles that threaten and dehumanize the Palestinian people. And that means divesting from the institutions that fund the occupation and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. That means defunding. That means rejecting the Republicans and the Democrats who have for generations stood shoulder to shoulder with the Israeli occupiers. They know. All right, we have another speaker. By the way, if you have, if you would like to speak, come talk to me or come talk to my brother Ahmed over there.
أوجه رسالة كبيرة لإسرائيل.
Actually, hey, hold on. One we have a better sound system. Okay, sure.
عبود, come here.
بدي أوجه رسالة كبيرة لإسرائيل. إذا أنت عندك جيش كبير وعندك أسلحة وعندك ذخيرة وتارك الشعب الفلسطيني بحارب بالحجار تفكر حالك إنك زلمة وإنك إشي هيبة فإنك غلطانة كثير. وأنا بعلنها لكل. بتحدى أمريكا وبتحدى كل الدول يفتحون الحدود ويفتحوا الحدود والله العظيم سوف نحرر فلسطين. الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر. بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين.
بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين.
بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين. بالروح بالدم نفديك يا فلسطين.
All right, up next we have Mazen. You ready, Mazen?
Yeah.
All right. It's pretty good. All right.
All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming, and thanks for SJP for planning this. We just have a few things I would like to share with you guys. Okay. These events are good. It's good for us to make our voices loud. It's good for us to tell the people that we exist. We're part of this community. We demand justice for our brothers and sisters and families in Palestine. But at the same time, we need to do more. We need to do action. And how could we do that? We need to be involved in the politics in this country. The change is gonna come from this country. The change will come by changing the politics in this country. We have one congresswoman who's Rashida Tlaib from a Palestinian origin, and she has been able to do some change in Congress. We have over 30 congresspeople now signing on statements condemning the Israeli actions. So we need more of Rashida. We need to get more involved. Probably none of us here knows Joyce Beatty, who represents us, whose office is down the street. But we need to get involved with her. We need to tell her that we are Palestinians. We need to tell her that we are your constituents. We have our voices. We have our demands. You either represent us and represent our demands or get the hell out of here. And we need to put someone else instead. We need to get involved. We need to get involved by communicating with them, by telling them what our demands are, by getting involved in politics, by donating for campaigns. We need to make our voices heard. We need to tell our politicians that we exist, and that starts from our community getting involved in all aspects. Our mosques need to make their voices heard. Our churches need to make their voices heard. Every institution that us as Palestinians and Arab and Muslims and Christians and people of humanity are involved in need to make a stance, need to take a position on this matter. Silence is complicity. Whoever is silent is involved in this.
Yes.
If we have noticed, look at the institutions that you're part of. Look at the mosque that you go to or the church that you go to. If they're silent, then stop going to them. Don't give them money. Go to someone else. Demand that they get involved. Demand that they say what you want them to say. If a politician comes to you for money, tell them make a statement first. Take a position first and represent me. Otherwise, I am not with you. We're not with someone just because their name is like us, or they look like us, or their religion is like us. We will not support them unless they actually speak what we want them to say, what we want them to say. So we need to get involved in all of our institutions. If you're a student in your university or in your school, we need to get involved. As a community, we need to get united and have our organizations to represent us. And we will work on that. We will have that happen. We need representation. We need to explain, we need to tell everyone in this society, every single American, regardless of their background, that they need to become a part of this struggle. They need to demand that their leadership stops funding this. Everything going on in Palestine is funded by the U.S. It's protected by the U.S. in legal terms, in U.N. terms, in everything else. The U.S. is enabling Israel to do everything that it's been doing for over 72 years in Palestine. We need to demand that every single American becomes involved and says no to this. Make sure of this. In your chants, in your demands, in your statements, make sure of this. This is not a religious fight. This is not about religion. This is not about identity. This is about humanity. This is about people losing their homes, people losing their lands, people being refugees. This is about children who are losing their childhoods. This is what it is about. It's not a religious conflict. This is about humanity. So everyone who has any sense of humanity needs to be involved in this, to demand that it stops. 72 years are enough. They are enough, and our people are sick of this, and they will, and they do have the right to resist this in all means. They are going to resist, and we are with them in their resistance. We are going to stand with them in every single way possible. Thank you. All right. We got that. Thank you to Madden. Before we have our next speaker, can we back up a little bit? I know there's so many of us here. Okay. So up next, thank you to Brother Madden, by the way. He made a good point. This is not a religious conflict. This is about human rights. This is not a conflict that's 1,000 years old and too difficult for people to understand. This is about an ethnic cleansing that's been happening and is happening right now. Next up, we have Nina, who would like to speak.
Nina.
Yes, N-I-N-A. N-I-N-A. Nina.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Hello. I'm fully vaccinated.
I'm reading a poem today by a Palestinian woman named Jess Abu Ghattas. It's titled Semantics. When the census came, they called us Caucasian. When we went to school, they called us Arabs. When we met the Arabs, they called us Catholics. When Athena's brand started making hummus, they called us Greek. And when we made spanakopita on Christmas, we called it Sabaner. When we made Moroccan couscous, we called it Israeli. And when the towers fell, we were Americans. And when the towers fell, we were afraid. When we were asked at the airport, we were Lebanese. And when the people who asked us were Lebanese, we feigned the accent all the way to our respective gates. When the war began, we were Syrians. I have been Syrian for 3 years, since I heard a girl of three washed up on a tepid Turkish shore like a cold cup of coffee, reciting the Lord's Prayer in her Levantine tongue. When churches burned and the Copts bled, we were Egyptian for decades. When my cousin was born with maple-colored curls, we called her blonde. And when we wanted boyfriends and girlfriends, our parents called us Americans. And when they passed the history test and swore on the Bible, we called our parents Americans. When the forefathers founded a new homeland, they called the people who lived there Indians. They fashioned some stars and they called it America. After the massacres, they called them Native Americans. After our massacres, no one called us Native Israelis. When we elected a black man president, we called it progress. We don't hate anybody, my mother always said. What we hate is being erased from Google Maps. What we hate is, by any other name, still called genocide. Aren't we all Palestinian? In the way we are all lonely and nationless when we are dead, reduced to bodies to be swallowed up by the earth? In America, indigenous people were confined to reservations until 1924. In America, they still call it the Department of Indian Affairs. In America, they've called it Gaza, the West Bank, the Palestinian territories. On Google Maps, they don't call it anything at all. When my grandmother is asked where she is from, she answers in broken English, Bethlehem, where Jesus born. I stand to correct her. She is from Palestine, where your Jesus was born, where your Jesus walked, where our children are blown up with phosphorus. She is from Palestine, land of Mahmoud Darwish, Turkish coffee, and the freshest falafel you will ever taste. Say it for the middle school teacher who made a point of mispronouncing my last name, Palestine. Say it for the U.S. Census that calls us white, Palestine. Say it for the stuttering newscaster, Palestine.
Palestine.
Say it for the bumbling history professor, Palestine.
Palestine.
Say it for the biblically challenged, Palestine.
Palestine.
Say it for the people in the back row, Palestine.
Palestine.
Say it for the people in the front row, Palestine.
Palestine.
Say it. And say it again and again, the letters becoming softer in your mouth. Palestine, ya bladi. When my grandmother is tired, it sounds like a swallow fluttering outward from her throat. Thank you.
نريد to sit down for 1 minute. نقرأ سورة الفاتحة لأرواح الشهداء.
Has bombed our people, has incarcerated our people, has weaponized identity politics against our people, has weaponized the state to terrorize our people. They've policed us. They've starved us. And today, we say no more.
No more! No more!
Sheikh Jarrah is a turning point global event. Sheikh Jarrah built on this legacy of struggle and built on last year's protests against police brutality around the world. Sheikh Jarrah is a turning point moment.
Yes.
Sheikh Jarrah is the last neighborhood they will threaten with ethnic cleansing.
Yes! Yes!
Today, we don't just demand conditioning aid to Israel. We command absolute divestment, absolute sanctions, and boycotts of Israel, because Israel will not stop oppressing us. Today, we're here to stand for justice. We're here to stand for the legacy of struggle for all colonized people around the world and fight for collective liberation, because an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere.
Yes.
And when the people of Palestine bleed, we bleed too.
Yes.
So today, we stand in solidarity and we march in solidarity with the tens of thousands of Palestinians marching from Lebanon and marching from Jordan and marching from Gaza to reunify, to return home, because our right of return, it's not a question. It's a demand. It's a demand, and we're going to make it happen. We're going to make it happen with direct action. We're going to make it happen with boycotts and marches and sit-ins. And we're going to build power in this community. We're going to stand against hate. And we're going to stand for collective liberation. So join me. We're going to take the streets, and we're going to make it clear that this community does not accept ethnic cleansing, does not accept oppression, does not accept mass incarceration. Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Long live Palestine!
Long live Palestine!
Long live the Intifada!
Long live the Intifada!
Intifada, Intifada!
Intifada, Intifada!
Let's go!
Free, free Sheikh Jarrah!
Free, free Sheikh Jarrah!
Free, free Sheikh Jarrah!
Free, free Sheikh Jarrah! Free, free Sheikh Jarrah!
Free, can we step to the side for a minute?
You want to go that way?
Sure. Whatever you want.
Okay, my name is Mazen Rasool. I'm a local attorney, Palestinian-American attorney, who's been living in Columbus for the past 12 years.
So there have been other Palestinian solidarity demonstrations throughout the last couple of decades here in Columbus, none measuring quite as large as this one. People here are saying that this is a turning point. What's your sense of that? Why would this be a turning point now?
This is definitely a turning point because every single Palestinian from all backgrounds in all areas that they live in around the world are in this struggle today together. You're finding people in Jerusalem, where it started this time, people in Sheikh Jarrah, a neighborhood in Jerusalem, people in the West Bank, in Gaza, in refugee camps, even people living inside historical Palestine, in Israel currently, are all revolting and saying this is enough. They've had enough. They will not let one more house be stolen. They will not have one more child be killed and stay silent.
So historically in Palestine, there have been two separate organizations representing different factions within the Palestinian population. Are you saying that now you're seeing unity between those divisions, a healing of that division?
No. Today we've seen the people on the streets, the people fighting and leading the struggle today, are beyond any fractions, they are beyond any political parties, they are beyond any politicians that have existed and exist, which we believe is one part that has been an obstacle in the Palestinian people's fight for their demands for justice and for freedom. Today, people are not waiting for any official or any political party or anyone else to tell them what to do or when to do it. People are going on the streets to say this is enough and we are done with this.
So peace could come as the result of a ceasefire, but that's a narrow kind of peace. Often when grievances are raised like this, the media and consumers of the media overlook or omit the core demands of the people raising the grievance, which generally transcend the short-term goals. In other words, you're not just here for a ceasefire, you're here for a larger context of justice. What would that look like at this point? Is there a two-state solution, a one-state solution? What does the future hold here?
Honestly, today, no one could predict what's happening. No one predicted that this would be happening. No one ever predicted that demonstrations will be really in every single part of historical Palestine. And no one knows where this would lead to. A ceasefire is not peace at all. A ceasefire is just putting the problems aside and letting them even grow and grow for the next explosion that's going to be even bigger. Every time they have a ceasefire, a few years later, we have even a bigger explosion by the people. The peace will not come until people give their rights, regardless of what kind of solution that comes, regardless if it's a one-state or a two-state. Palestinians need to have protection, have to be protected for their lives, for their properties, for their future. Everything in the Palestinians, in the Palestinian people's lives needs to be protected. Palestinians have to have equal rights, and regardless of the solution. All these different solutions are things that came out of politicians that failed and failed again and again and again to bring justice to the Palestinian people. We've seen the peace process for so many years, the so-called two-state solution idea that came up for years and it still hasn't been implemented. One-state solution ideas have been circulating for even longer than that, and none of these have been implemented. What Palestinian people care about is getting justice and living their lives safely for their lives, for their properties, and for their futures. And that's what's important. The political identity of the country is not what really matters. If we have a Palestinian government or in a two-state solution, or if we have one-state solution or whatever it's called, people need to live their lives safely and freely and have equal rights.
Of course, there are parallels between the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and civil rights struggles here in the United States, with long-lived, deep-rooted animosities between stereotypical rivals. As long as philosophies of nationalism and statehood prevail, especially on the Israeli side, is cooperation possible, do you think? And if so, what are the paths to that?
Cooperation with... Can you just clarify that question a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So there are deep-seated animosities between people who have been aggrieved and those who feel that they're entitled. How can those be resolved so that some kind of a democratic solution is possible?
Well, unfortunately, the only way to resolve these is to have the people who are the oppressors or the people who are having this privilege be inconvenienced in some way. Or feel uncomfortable in some way. And that's what happened in the U.S. with the Black Lives Matter movement and then other movements. Really, people just need to... The Palestinian people need to continue their fight, continue to make their voices loud. And the Israeli people need to come to a realization that what is going on is wrong. Continuing to elect again and again and again, every time, even more extreme and more right-wing governments is not going to help Israel. It's never going to bring peace to Israel. It's never going to bring security to Israel. This is just going to make things worse. The Israeli community needs to understand that and needs to understand that as much as they want security, Palestinians have a right to security. As much as they want freedoms, Palestinians have rights to freedoms and to justice.
And just lastly, I know you want to rejoin the march here, but with the situation in South Africa, the other recent example of apartheid, the United States was key in brokering a settlement there, whether that was a just settlement or not. At least it ended the apartheid regime. Is the United States in a similar position today with regard to Israel? In other words, where if the United States were to change its position or withdraw its support or even threaten to withdraw its support, would that be the critical catalyst?
What's required from the United States right now at the minimum is to stay out of this conflict, or if they cannot treat both parties equally and actually demand justice, if they cannot put pressure on Israel, then at least they should stay out of it. The U.S. with its continuous funding with its continuous cover for the Israeli government and for these Israeli policies is actually enabling Israel to go further and further in their actions. They are blocking Palestinians from even going to the International Court of Criminal Court or to the United Nations. The U.S. ambassador has blocked even a meeting at the United Nations Security Council right now. They don't even want the Security Council to meet and convene to discuss this topic, to give Israel more and more room to continue their massacres, to continue their genocide, to continue what they are doing in Palestine today. So the U.S. government needs to, if they cannot take a good position that actually brings peace and justice, then they should at least stay out of it.
Thank you. You can bet we'll be following that story closely. In fact, there's another rally, this one co-sponsored by Jewish Voices for Peace, on Friday, today, if you're listening to WCRS, tomorrow, if you're listening on WGRN, in Goodale Park at 5 p.m. In other news that actually broke last week, the family of police-murdered Columbus resident Andre Hill has accepted an unprecedented $10 million settlement from the city of Columbus for the killing of Mr. Hill. The news of this made the headlines briefly, but here's audio from a press conference featuring Andre Hill's family and attorneys, including the nationally renowned Benjamin Crump.
Crump, along with my great co-counsels, attorney Mike Wright, who hails here in the state of Ohio, his law partner, attorney Rick Schulte, the former president of the Ohio Trial Lawyers, and attorney Natalie Jackson, who is an incredible lawyer who hails from Orlando, Florida. We are honored and privileged to represent the family of Andre Hill, his sister, Ms. Shauna Burnett, his sister, attorney Michelle Harrison, his brother, our co-counsel, Alvin Williams, and his legacy. His legacy. His only child, his daughter, Miss Carissa Hill, and she's here with her partner Chris and her beautiful little princess. Can you say hey? She's shy today. But we thought it fitting that she be here because, you know, really, when she grows up, she's gonna ask what happened to her papa, Big Daddy, who adored his grandchildren. He lived in the house with his daughter and the grandchildren and helped provide for them, helped make sure they had a home that was filled with love. And when she asked about him, his daughter and their family, we'll talk about this historic day. This historic day. And that's why we come here to applaud the city leadership in exhibiting responsible leadership to say that Andre Hill life mattered. That his life mattered. And to send the message that we're better than this, America. You see, Andre Hill family, attorney Wright, gets an opportunity to achieve something that most African American families never get a chance to achieve, and that is full justice. Full justice. You know, this civil resolution, which, as we understand it, Attorney Schulte, is the highest amount ever paid out in a pretrial civil rights police excessive use of force case in the state of Ohio. And so, Carissa can tell her three children that your grandfather made history today in partnership with the city of Columbus to say that his life mattered, that it would not be swept under the rug, that we will remember his legacy. The fact that you have this historic settlement, not just for the $10 million amount, but more importantly, Attorney Jackson, for the policy implications. The fact that Andre Hill's law will not only forever impact the state of Ohio, but because of the great work of Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, who is the chairperson of the Congressional Black Caucus, that Andre Hill's law, this requirement to have body cam video on, when you have an interaction with a citizen, will be part of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act that the United States Senate is negotiating for President Biden to sign into law. Well, that is part of Andre Hill's legacy, thanks to the responsible leadership that comes from Columbus, Ohio. And I want to take a point of personal privilege, if I could, Caressa. I want to thank Congresswoman Joyce Beatty for her exceptional leadership. And we understand that her husband passed today. So with a heavy heart, as we recognize the legacy of Andre Hill, we want to thank her for being with this family from the beginning, every step forward from when this first happened to now. And so she's with us, even though she's dealing with her own personal tragedy. We thank her so much. This whole family thanks her for her leadership. Full justice is not just about a civil resolution. And we thank Mayor Geither and the city leadership, the city council president Shannon, and all for their amazing leadership, because this is the first step to being able to get full justice. We're vigilant and focused that we also get criminal accountability. We have done what we can do, these great lawyers and myself. Seventh Amendment allows for civil justice. The 10th Amendment allows for criminal justice. So we want the Attorney General of the state of Ohio to continue to make this historic moment for the state of Ohio, so all America can learn from Ohio. We watched it happen with George Floyd, and it's so ironic as we prepare for the 1 year anniversary of George Floyd on May 25th, that's just around the corner, that Ohio is setting what I hope and pray will be a new precedent for the state of Ohio, for the citizens of Ohio, to say we can get full justice, that equal justice is possible, that equal justice is possible in the state of Ohio, because our white brothers and sisters expect and often receive full justice. It's just black people in America have rarely received full justice, Caressa and Shauna, but your family, you all have an opportunity to receive full justice. That is civil justice, criminal justice, and legislative justice with these policies that will not just impact your family, but hopefully will impact all the citizens in the state of Ohio when we have Andre Hill law passed and signed by your governor to say that we must have body camera videos on when you have interactions with citizens. And Sean and Alvin, that you must give life-saving medical assistance when possible to every citizen. as black citizens, brown citizens, red citizens, white citizens, all citizens should be treated equally. And we thank the city leadership for saying that we're better than this America, that we can be more just to all of our citizens. So we document this historic day, and we thank the city leadership for saying that Andre Hill life matters. With that, you're going to hear from Attorney Mike Wright and Attorney Rick Schulte, Attorney Nala Jackson, and then you will hear from the people who matter most at this day, the people who will define the legacy of their loved one. Because to us, it's a case. Andre Hill has become a hashtag. The video has went viral. But to her, this is her flesh and blood. This is her father. This is the person that will have to answer the question to Andre's grandchildren. And so this is what this is about. Attorney Mike Wright.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to acknowledge the hard work of Attorney Ben Crump. Ben, thank you for all you do. Also for Attorney Richard Schulte, Attorney Natalie Jackson, Attorney Robert Gresham. We had a team, and we worked together for this family. I want to also really acknowledge the family. They have went through this process with poise and grace. This is really a beautiful family, and this is a very tragic situation. Although, you know, the civil resolution is a great thing, as Attorney Crump indicated. When all this is said and done, this family is still going to be here. I praise this family for unifying and for carrying I praise this family for unifying and also for being together and really supporting one another. I also want to thank the City of Columbus for their leadership, as Attorney Crump indicated. They did the right thing. Mm-hmm. They absolutely did the right thing. This family can now start the healing process as it relates to this portion of the case. But as Attorney Crump also said, this is not over. We want the Attorney General to vigorously pursue the prosecution, the conviction of Officer Coy, and this family will be standing together and making sure that they get full justice. Thank you.
And I just want to acknowledge, again, Attorney Mike Wright and Attorney Rick Schulte, some of the best lawyers in America, and certainly the finest lawyers I've worked with here in the state of Ohio, who work night and day in this negotiating this historic resolution. It could not have been done without their commitment to excellence. So thank you. Attorney Rick Schulte.
I'll just be brief. As a trial lawyer, you learn that leadership requires that you deal with failures and you deal in truth. Okay? The City of Columbus stepped forward, and they dealt with their failures, and they dealt with the truth. And they had a choice. They could have ran and hid behind the law. They could have delayed justice for this family, and they chose not to. They stepped forward, and they decided to acknowledge their failures and do the right thing before they ended up in the courtroom. And they need to be applauded for that. It helps this family in their healing process, and it was the right thing to do. It's a step in the right direction. And I'm just honored to be on this legal team and help this wonderful family. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Rick, for being a good anchor for the legal team. You and Mike, I mean, I can't say enough good things about you all. What fine lawyers we have here in Ohio that really helps set the example for the nation. So thank you. I can't say enough about the calming effect that Attorney Natalie Jackson had with this whole family, but especially Carissa. Those nights when she called crying, saying they took my dad. They took my dad. It was oftentimes Attorney Jackson counseling me, saying that, hey, we have to not just be technical. We have to understand over and over again that he meant the world to his little girl. And I can never overstate her importance to this legal team and making sure everybody was unified and kept up to speed, especially when I got busy, when Mike and Rick got busy. Natalie always sacrificed her time night or day to be here for the family. And she did it with Trayvon Martin's family when we worked together and so many other families. So this sister is one of the best lawyers in America, and I'm so proud to call her my co-counsel, Attorney Natalie Jackson.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Rick. I think that the most important thing that we need to talk about, now that we've talked about the restitution to this family, which is owed, is the policy and the justice part. And that comes from the activists on the front line. So one thing that we always want to do when we're in these cases, I know with Attorney Crump, he is always saying, let's remember the activists, because without them, we couldn't do the job that we do. We go to the court, but they go to the streets, and we really appreciate all the work that they do, and they help not only to get the restitution for this family, but the policy and the justice for society. So what we see now in the George Floyd and Policing Act, we see the Andre Hill law being incorporated into that, where now when police officers encounter a citizen, they have to have on it, they have to have their cameras on. There's no more excuses to have your cameras off. So we'd like to thank, I think on behalf of the team, and I know Attorney Crump is really, this is one of his passions. And his passion is that we change society and we make it a more just society for everyone. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for the family. Thank you for this team and allowing me to be a part of this team. I really love you all.
Thank you, Attorney Jackson. And now we will have Andre's oldest sister, Miss Shauna the matriarch of this.
Hi, everybody. All right. Thanks for coming. One of the things that I wanted to just talk about was my memory of my brother. Today does mark a historic day for us. It's a joyous day, but it's also a sad day, too, because he's not here. He's always been the person who cared for everybody, made sure everybody had everything they needed, wanted. If they didn't, he would find a way to do it. So with him not being here and being able to comfort us and to take care of us, that hurts my heart that he's not here. But those are some of the fond memories I have of him as far as taking care of us and always being there for us, and most definitely for his daughter, Carissa, and his grandbabies. He loved his kids and his grandkids so much. And of course, the whole family as well, because like I said, he looked out for everybody, not just brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins. Didn't matter, whoever needed something, he was there for them. So this today actually marks another portion of where he's still here with us, just not physically, but he's still here with us. His legacy is gonna live on. The money is a good thing, but having Andre here would be better. But it is, I mean, it just is what it is. So I'm happy about that. As far as there will be Brentonell Recreation Center, the gymnasium in the center is actually going to be renamed Andre Hill's Gymnasium, I believe, and I'm really excited about that because this is the community that we grew up in, and he loved his community just like he loved his family. Brentonell is like a really special community that we all grew up in, so everybody, even though they're not family, they're extended family. So this is the place that he grew up, he loved, and he would always bring the kids there as well. So we're really excited and happy about that too, because again, that's another part of him that's going to live on. So even when the grandbabies get older, they'll be able to go there and recognize what this means. And then as far as Andre's Law, I'm excited about that. I'm happy that it has been put into place, because body cameras need to always be on when the officers are on the scene. Before they step out of the car, they need to be on. And like Natalie said, no more excuses, no more names. And also, we need to have medical attention immediately. So this is something that I'm really excited about that needs to move forward and be not just here, but everywhere. So like Attorney Crump said, this is going to be something that's going to be incorporated. We're happy about that. There's just so many things going through my head that I could talk about, but I don't want to take up everybody's time. But I just want to thank the city for coming forward and doing what they knew was right and just. And that says a mouthful, because when you have people behind you to help you and to be moral in their decisions and decisions that they make, that says a whole lot about not just our immediate situation, but the whole community as a whole. Because we don't want anybody else to go through what we're going through. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Shauna. Very heartfelt. Now this next young man, it's his Andre's brother, but he really has been like a co-counselor. He always tells us different things as we were working on the case to consider and to fact that. So it was nothing for me to get a text at 1 a.m. saying, Attorney Crump, did you consider this? And so I give you his brother, Alvin Williams, who really is our co-counsel.
Good afternoon, everybody. I want to appreciate the family foremost, all the attorneys, City of Columbus, State of Ohio, all of the positive protesters, police officers, Mayor, all the ones who played a positive part into this tragedy. I won't sit up here and shed any tears, but it took all of us to set this new positive trend about wrongdoing in policing. We want things to change rapidly, immediately. As far as my brother, every soldier doesn't make it through battle. But the thing is, they've paved the way for everybody else to have freedom and the righteous way of living in a more peaceful society. And that's what we're looking for. Today, as far as the civil part of the matter, it's just a new trend, a step towards doing the right thing, restitution, compensation for wrongdoing. But it doesn't conclude what really needs to be done, and that's to set a new mark, a new landslide of everybody in this society being able to live and know that they're going to live in peace and righteousness. Today is a day of freedom mentally, to know that things are moving into the right direction. And like I said, all the reporters, TV broadcasters, it took all of us to set this new landmark. And hopefully we can change some things, not overnight, but eventually. So everybody keep their heads up, and who's ever on the bandwagon for justice, stay on it, because the train is just to start moving.
Well said, co-counsel. And now we will hear from the legacy of Andre Hill, and obviously she's going to do her best, but this is very emotional, and please understand that. We will have Carissa Hill come forward and try to give you some brief remarks.
First of all, I want to thank Ben and his team, Mike and Natalie, for being on all call 24 hours to me whenever I need them. And I just want to thank Shannon Harden for helping push for the Andre's Law so Joyce Beatty can even make it federally around the world for everybody. It is a very big day for me and my family today, and My daughter's 3. She might not understand it now, but when she's older, she will definitely understand the legacy that her big daddy left behind for her. And she will be going to the same gym, but the difference is when I went, I was going with my dad, and when she goes to the gym, it'll just be for my dad and my dad's name, which that is a very big blessing, and it's a good legacy to leave behind. And we're just very sad that we can't share that with my dad being here, and we know he's here with us still, though. So I just want to say thank you. It's one step, but it's not full justice. It's one step towards something. It doesn't help, or it doesn't take the scar off of our hearts that we still have from my dad not being here. But it's something, and it's a start. So we appreciate everybody.
Thank you, Carissa. We'll open it up for questions. We'll take your questions if you have any. Yes, sir.
From a family perspective, Carissa, can you just talk about your emotions, just how emotional has the past few months been, and when you got word of this settlement, what was going through your head? What are some of the discussions that the family was having?
Well, it's very emotional because every day you turn on the TV, you see a new killing. So it re-triggers because no matter how it happened or justified, non-justified, you see it and it brings back a trigger that my dad's not here. We really haven't had no discussions or anything farther past that. It's just all kind of come into us. So.
Are you surprised that the city, and this is a question of family and attorney. Are you surprised that the city settled so fast? When you talk about $10 million, that's a pretty quick settlement.
Still outstanding is the yet to see even an indictment is the case of Casey Goodson Jr., whose attorney Sean Walton we featured here several times. When there's a development in that case, you'll be able to hear about it here too on Conscious Voices, heard each week at this time in your community radio stations, WCRSLP 92.7 and 98.3 FM, and WGRNLP 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Evan Davis, and I'll be with you again next week for another edition. Take care. The program you are listening to is broadcast both on community radio station WCRS via translator W245AY at 98.3 FM and on WGRN 94.1 FM, WCRSFM.org, and WGRN.org. If you like what you're hearing or want to get involved, please visit those websites and give what you can. Both stations are non-commercial and volunteer-run. Both stations depend on listener support. Again, the websites are WCRSFM.org for WCRS and WGRN.org for WGRN.
This is Professor Howard Zinn. The independent, non-commercial radio station you're listening to is really important in the maintenance of democracy. Thomas Jefferson once said, an informed democracy will behave in a reasonable manner. So if you care about being informed, if you care about democracy, if you're a reasonable person, you are, of course. Please support your source for uncensored news and views and the voice of your community.
Hi, this is Holly Neer. I'm a singer and songwriter, and I've just gotten off the stage at ComFest here in Ohio 2012. I was here 37 years ago, so it was great to be back. I want to encourage you all to keep listening to Community Radio Station, which you finally have. WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 FM. Listen to social change music and keep your hope alive. Ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame.